Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today. So let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I am very excited to have Sharon Sowell here, who is an artist. She works with scissors a lot, which is what I got, how I found her. She has this great artwork that can combines like calligraphy and watercolor, and then she also works with scissors. And because we quilt, we are very lucky that many of her designs are now found on fabrics. And so I am excited to talk to her. Hi, Sharon. How are you?
Hello. I'm so glad to talk to you, Pat.
You know, this is so, what you're doing, like with the handwork part of it is, I think, what quilters and people who stitch and do any kind of handwork. It's so exciting to see your work.
Thank you. I think I'm sort of a fussy cut queen in my own way.
So tell me a little bit about your artwork, because quilters might not know that part if they have found your fabric already.
Well, if you love scissors like I do, and like I think most quilters, my quilt friends do,
right,
you just love to cut anything at hand. And sometimes you don't have fabric. So I used to have a jewelry design company. And whenever I was talking on the phone, I would cut up old invoices or whatever was at hand, just like other people doodle.
Yeah.
And then we went out fishing in a rowboat one day, and my kids had eaten the lunch and played with all the toys very quickly. I had nothing to entertain them. So I took my husband's Swiss Army knife and cut up the lunch bags. And I think I was just addicted to scissors ever since then. I know,
so
it's crazy. I have them in my pocket. You dare not put your hand into my pocket because there's probably a stray pair sitting there. And at last count, I had 60 pairs of scissors. I know,
oh my goodness.
Crazy, huh?
Oh,
I know.
Well, you know, some of us quilters might be able to match that, Sharon. You know,
yeah,
we might just.
It's true. It's
now,
true.
Do you also
those
quilt?
Of you who are listening, you might be just like me.
Right. So do you also make quilts, Sharon?
I do. But as you might expect, I tend to do a lot of applique. Mm-hmm. And I love cutting out all different kinds of fabric. So for me, it's not so much about the fabric itself. It's more about what I can cut out from it. So, yeah, I love just cutting it out, but I love designing it. I mean, it's super fun. I can just take that as a background, and then I stitch over top of it. It's so much fun.
Then yeah. You are a true quilter. We all make it our own path because everybody uses that fabric a different way. So what I watched the video that you did on how you cut out things,
mm-hmm.
and I have a link to it so everybody can go watch it. And it's on your April 16, 2015 at your blog too. So they could go there. But
mm-hmm.
that is such a fascinating thought process. Do you have a plan before you start cutting out this whole picture?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually it is a funky thought process, because if you don't plan it out ahead, just like if you were quilting, unless it's a crazy quilt, you pretty much know what you're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you don't, you do the wrong thing and then you can't recoup.
Yeah.
So if I, for example, am cutting out a child, if I didn't plan it in advance, then maybe the legs would be cut off or something. Mm-hmm. It could be disaster. Yeah.
So,
I just have this philosophy, though, that all life is a miracle. And so it's really fun to look at the world around me and just cut it out of paper. I love that. So, yeah, I plan it out.
You're quite a thoughtful person. Like reading your site, you you have a lot of, it seems like you take some quiet time so that you can absorb nature and absorb what's around you. Does that then get reflected in your work?
Very much so. Yeah. Yeah. I once read a quote that said, live deep, not fast. Mm. And it profoundly affected me. I think quilters know and understand the value of taking time, mm-hmm. not rushing through all of your life and then ending up with regrets. I mean, we tend to be thoughtful people, right?
Some of us, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's part of what the whole crafting process and the quilting and cut paper and calligraphy and all of those things tend to slow us down. So I think it's sort of an antidote to the hurry culture. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I like to cut things out, immensely love to cut things out. And my husband's always saying to me, I just can't believe you are that patient, because I'm not a very patient person in most things, but when it comes to my quilting, yes, you know, it's like a zen, you know, just to,
yeah.
Yeah, calm down. So tell me a little bit about, you've designed several fabric lines. Tell me the process when you're thinking about putting your artwork onto fabric. How does that, mm-hmm. how do you come up with the ideas?
It's kind of, for me, more a thing of how do you find time to do all the ideas? It's kind of reverse than what you might think. I have so many ideas that are just spilling out of me that I can't wait to finish. Mm-hmm. So it's more, if you just use your eyes and just look at what's around you, even the shape of one leaf can take you off down a merry path and you might never come back. There's just so much everywhere you look. I mean, just take one shell or what you can find in one square yard in your own back garden. It's mm-hmm. pretty amazing. I've got acorns sitting on my table now, and it's got me thinking about a leaf and seed collection coming up. I have a little grandbaby on the way, and that got me thinking about the first song I ever learned, Jesus Loves Me. And I did a whole collection for that, and that will be coming out from Henry Glass pretty quick here. And it's full of bright colors and butterflies and little pairs of sisters and brothers and catching leaves and blowing dandelions, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So anything can give you an idea.
That sounds so sweet. I really like that. Mm-hmm. I have a great nephew on the way. My niece is pregnant, so so cute. Now, the kind of paper cutouts that you do, that isn't the only type of artwork. So, because your fabric has things that don't look like paper cutouts as well, right?
True. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I figure if one art medium is good, then two is better, and three must be best of all. So right. I love calligraphy. I love watercolors. Sketching is a passion of mine. Mm-hmm. And I tend to roll it all into one. I also have an extensive collection of type that dates back to Civil War era and an old printing press. And so I scan things that I print and use those too.
So when you're working on like the fabric line, I'm just wondering about color, you know, how do you approach what, because when most collections of fabric, they tend to have a feel of a certain color. Do you pull mm-hmm. Swatches, or how do you figure out what colors you want to make it?
I love my camera. And so what I tend to do is I take photos everywhere I go, and then to pick my colors, I'll oftentimes go back to a photograph and just pull the colors from a photo. It seems like a photo that you like usually has colors, especially if it's natural, mm-hmm. not a photo of something man-made. It has colors that tend to blend. Let's say you take a picture in your garden. Pretty much mm-hmm. most of those colors go well together. That's my favorite method, I think. But, you know, most fabrics we do come out in different colorways. And so we might do like four colorways for a single type of fabric. And it's really fun when you get to pick all those colors. It can be confusing. Yeah, the whole rainbow at your disposal, narrowing it down can be really a challenge, but a pleasant one. It's kind of like trying to pick your favorite piece of chocolate.
Yeah. Yeah, that one's really tough. You know, that's...
mm-hmm. Yep.
Now, we only have like about 2 minutes, but you have family quilts as well, right?
I do. I have, one of my earliest memories was being freezing cold on a 4th of July, and my grandpa brought his mother's quilt out and draped it around me. I remember it was so warm and so comforting, and I don't have any quilts that are too special for me to use. I just believe in wrapping yourself up in love and the people that you love, wrapping them up in that warm and cozy quilt. Yeah.
I just think that you fit right in with all the quilters. We're all going to come and hang out with you.
It's our tribe. We know each other, right?
That is so true. That is so true. So what do you write? Just tell me like in a minute or less than a minute, what do you write about on your site?
I write about the amazing wonders that surround us and the ways that I get to participate with friends and loved ones and the nature around me. Yeah.
You do beautiful photography. You have gorgeous photography.
Oh, thanks. Thanks. Sometimes I get so busy with my art that I forget to post. I've got to post again today because I've got hundreds of pictures and tons of ideas, but I've just been so busy with art that I haven't posted. So watch for a new one this afternoon.
Okay, we will, Sharon. This has been just wonderful. I've loved talking about all of this with you. This has been just great.
Thank you, Pat. What a pleasure.
You can visit Sharon at her website. It's SharynSowell, and check out all of her work. We'll be right back.
Choose from more than 100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
Like American Patchwork and Quilting on Facebook for daily quilting inspiration, tips, and giveaways. Find us at facebook.com/APQ Magazine. See our editors share their tips, ideas, and techniques by visiting allpeoplequilt.com and clicking on videos.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
Follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ Magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I am really, really interested in what my next guest is going to talk about with me, because it is all about some tips and tricks for maybe some blocks that you think are hard to do. And Conda Lukow of Moose on the Porch Quilts has some really nifty ways of working her fabric. So Conda, thank you for being here.
Thanks, Pat.
So tell me a little bit about what your type of quilt making is, you know, what kind of your focus is for your projects.
Well, generally, I like to think of easier ways to do them. I've got six kids, and so, you know, I started quilting because it had to be fast and easy for me to be able to do it.
Yeah.
When I started quilting, because I didn't have a lot of time. And now I've started on a few things that take a little longer, but I'm always thinking of easier ways to do things.
You know, I really love that part because quilters, we want to make – sometimes we just want to make something. We don't want to have the a challenge to make it, but we also want to make it interesting. We don't just want to stick squares together all the time. You have written a lot of patterns, and you do have done a lot of books. Maybe we could talk a little bit about some of the books you've done for pre-cuts. What part of that do you like the best, the pre-cuts?
The thing I love about pre-cuts is that you can have a lot of fabric with not as much investment in the fabric. You can, you know, when you buy a pre-cut, you get every piece of the line. So it looks scrappy. It looks like you have a big stash, but it doesn't have to be quite as big. And it goes a long way because it's so scrappy.
You know, that's an excellent point because it is hard to collect. You know, it gets a little pricey to do even a fat quarter of every piece in a line. But if you buy a layer cake or something, you get every piece in the line. So which shape, you know, pre-cut shape is kind of your go-to to work with?
For a long time, it was the charm pack. And I still I still think that's where I'm drawn is the charm pack, that 5-inch square, just because of its price point, it can go a long ways. But now I've started playing with the layer cakes and jelly rolls and just seeing what I can do with the different pre-cuts. And I've been having a lot of fun. And now I'm not only a charm pack person. I really love all of them.
And you've written like, 14, 15 books?
Something like, I love count.
That's incredible. And are your books self-published?
Most of them are, not all of them, yes.
Right. That's a lot of writing. So can you give me a little tip on combining that pre-cut with some other fabric? Because, you know, generally you have to add something to the mix. How can people think about that?
So a couple things. One is solids are really big lately. And I think, you know, whether it's a solid that you're adding or something that reads like a solid, like a tone-on-tone print, those work really well. That's the easiest way. Those work really well with the pre-cut. Or sometimes I'll get like a basic, you know, that'll serve as a background fabric. And then I'll buy something that would work as a stop border and a large border. So maybe a bigger print or one of the bright colors because I like a stop border or a binding, you know, that has bright or has a good contrast.
Right.
So those are kind of things I look for.
And you've also done things for the Moda Bake Shop too. So
I have several things.
Right. So people can go out to the Moda Bake Shop and look you up. Now, I do want to switch over to the other type of quilts that were intriguing to me when I was out looking at your work. And that is what you were doing with the hexagons, because I think that's a shape that intrigues so many people. But they're like, oh, it might be hard, you know, you know, but
you
really made it easy.
Right. So I've done two different things with the hexagon. First is when Moda came out with the pre-cut hexagons, I just started playing with them because I knew nobody else would have a book with the pre-cut hexagon, so I needed to have one, of course, right?
Right.
And I just had so much fun playing with them. And while I was playing around with them, I discovered that they're not quite as fussy as I always thought they were. And I even discovered that I could chain piece them. And in my book, I talk about how to do that. So you can keep sewing because I like to do things fast. And so to have to stop and start with the traditional Y seam that you often get with a hexagon, it really bothered me. And so I had to figure out a faster way to do it. So, and I found that using my presser foot, I could just estimate that quarter inch. I didn't even draw the dot, you know, like sometimes you do on hexagon.
Right. Right.
And the Y seam really is a lot friendlier than I thought. And so that's one direction I went is, you know, with just those larger hexagons. And then the other is English paper piecing. And I've been really surprised that English paper piecing is nothing like applique. And, you know, those are both handwork, but I don't do applique very well. But English paper piecing is really forgiving. Mm-hmm. So I found that working with these hexagons, they're not as bad as I thought. And I've had a lot of fun with them.
They're not as bad as you thought. That's like
they're kind of given a bad rap. At least that was my impression. So
right.
It's been fun.
Yeah, I think sometimes people who love their machine kind of don't you find out, and then they're like, oh, there's handwork involved. No.
That was how I was for lots and lots of years. I'm just starting to appreciate handwork. So absolutely.
Now, we have a topic for the month that American Patchwork and Quilting magazines, and they're asking in the magazine, and I'm asking some of the designers, if you have a secret or a tip to give people on how to make their quilts better. Like in your mind, how do we make quilts better?
So I don't know if this is what people want to hear, but what I really, truly believe in is you make better quilts by making quilts.
Mm-hmm.
And just the more you do it, and you just naturally get better. And just always concentrating on just cutting better and sewing a quarter inch seam better, just by doing it more, you just automatically get better. It's interesting.
I think so, too, because you know, you don't get better by reading about it.
Right.
You have to sit down and do the work. You know, you have to make. And the work is fun. Making quilts is fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's just play, right?
Right.
Most of the time.
That's right. So when you're doing, do you have a favorite way of getting an accurate quarter inch?
Well, I've tried a few different ways. On one machine, it had a quarter inch presser foot with a guide that I really liked. But then when I went to my other machine, I just had to play with it. And I think it's worth taking the time to find where your machine quarter inch is.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and just knowing it for each machine that you use.
Yeah. And it can change so much from machine to machine. So it's like taking that extra few minutes to test it out and be sure. And because so many people switch machines.
Right.
You know, for whatever reason, for travel or they have vacation homes or whatever. So, yeah, switching it around. You have tutorials out on your site, too, don't you?
People can check several. Yes.
Yeah. So what are one or two of them?
A lot of them have to do with the pre-cuts, just because I have so much fun. I've got links to, you know, the ones that you on Moda Bake Shop on my website. Some of them I've done a while ago, so I don't have them right on my head, but I know one of them is machine binding. That's, you know, just a basic one that's a great one I like.
Perfect. And they can go see that from moosequilts.com. So how did you get that name, Moose Quilts?
Well, it became my business name is Moose on the Porch Quilts, and my husband's really creative, and he thought up that name.
Oh.
We just liked it. So I've got my logo is a big purple moose, and I live in Utah, so there are moose here, but none on my porch, so I had to get a big metal moose that's on my porch now. And Moose on the Porch Quilts is just way too long to write, so I just shortened it to moosequilts.com. So.
Right. And do you have, like, a love of the moose? Is that why, or just was a fun name?
I do. I mean, I do like moose, but, you know, it's just such a gangly, awkward animal, but that's still so fascinating that I thought it appealed to me because, you know, sometimes I feel that way, you know, like I'm not actually gangly, but, you know, that I feel like, you know, that I don't always do everything right, but that's okay. It's still fun, and it doesn't matter.
So what quilt, we have about 2 minutes, what quilt are you personally working on right now?
Lots. But one of them that I recently started just a month or two ago that I am in love with is Grandmother's Flower Garden, just a hand piece, English paper piecing, and I call it my 10-year project. So I've started dragging it around, you know, just sitting when I'm, you know, at the dentist's office or at night when the kids are just playing or, you know, gymnastics. This is my take around, you know, hand project that with reproduction fabrics that, you know, will be queen size. So that's one that I just started working on that's going to take me a long time.
Yeah. And will you use scraps you have, or are you buying for that project?
So I started out with scraps, but
yeah,
that doesn't last very long. Yeah, so I've bought some for it too.
and just real brief, do you have a sewing group local to you? Because you told me you live a bit out in the country in a small town.
Yes, I do. So there's a few around. Within half an hour, there's several. But, you know, we just started one recently that's, you know, local here. That's the Nebo Modern Quilt Group. That's been a lot of fun. We started that about a year ago.
Ah, that's nice. It's nice to be able to meet people in person.
Absolutely. Right. Yeah. So I really try to interact with the quilters around here because it's a big support system. You know, as a mom, you want, sometimes you feel like you get just talking kid all the time and you want to talk to adults, and it's a good support system, you know, having quilters around, somebody that shares your interests.
It totally does. This has been so much fun, Conda. I appreciate you being able to come on today.
Thank you so much, Kat. I appreciate it.
We're going to be right back after the break here.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration. Quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. Set yourself up to stitch a little every day. When you finish stitching, before putting everything away, rethread your needle and take the first stitch. Then the next time you pull out your project, you'll be ready to sit down and start stitching.
Hi, I'm Linda Augsburg. Join me in 2015 for a brand new video series called Show Me How, brought to you by Baby Lock. Each month, I'll show you how to complete a simple project from start to finish. Learn new techniques, see tips, and sew a great project. Visit allpeoplequilt.com/videos to watch.
Take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Welcome back to American Podcast, American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and this show is brought to you by Moda Fabrics. You can visit them at the Moda Bake Shop, where Conda is got a lot of patterns out there, or you can go to Moda's main website, where you can find many other things for quilters, including fun printables. So we're going to switch gears a little bit here on topic-wise and talk with Lisa Ellis, who is the director of the nonprofit organization Sacred Threads. She is also an artist herself and makes amazing quilts. So I really want to find out and get you information about the Sacred Threads organization. So thank you, Lisa, for being here.
Thanks, Pat, for having me.
So tell me first, what is your personal quilt style? How do you like to work?
Oh, gosh. I consider myself a quilt artist, which means that I make work that is original, and I enjoy the opportunity to try to make something that's an expression of something that I'm feeling or thinking. Mm-hmm. So most of my work has a spiritual component. That's a big part of my life. And so a lot of my work I belongs in churches. In fact, I just finished a commission for a church here in Virginia, made four pieces for their sanctuary. So a lot of my work is a reflection of space and or of nature. I live at the beach, and so often I will make pieces that are a reflection of where I live and what inspires me with nature around me.
Now, you've been quilting for a while. Think, you know, back about it. Like, how have you changed? Is it immense, or has it been sort of a slow change for your work style?
I think it's been pretty slow, actually. I think subject-wise, my work hasn't changed that much. Mm-hmm. But I do think that as I've gotten more competent, and also as the tools have changed. When I first mm-hmm. started making art quilts, I was, you know, doing everything primarily by, you know, piecing, curved piecing. Now I use fusible. So yeah. As I've learned about new tools that are available, I have found ways of making my work easier. But I think, you know, in terms of the themes of the work that I make, that's pretty much, I've stayed true to that. I tend to do things, as I mentioned, of nature and also of space themes.
Yeah, I love your work, and people can see it out at your website, ellisquilts.com, so they can visit your gallery you have there, and you also give workshops, so
I do, yeah,
people can have you come out. And so we're gonna talk about Sacred Threads, which is an
Great.
Exhibit that your director of the Sacred Threads now. So just first give me some backstory as to what the exhibit is.
So Sacred Threads was started back in 1999 by Vicky Pignatelli. She was the founder. And she had a vision for creating an exhibition that would allow quilters that are making works as an expression of healing, grief, peace, joy, spirituality, peace and brotherhood, that there would be an appropriate venue for people making these incredibly poignant pieces. Pieces that have a real story behind them. She'd had an experience where she had put a quilt in a large quilt festival, and the comments that she received back were quite negative, and she thought that perhaps because it was a spiritual quilt, mm-hmm. the judge was perhaps offended by the topic, and that's why the comments were negative. And so she really felt that there needed to be a safe place. And so they began Sacred Threads in Columbus, Ohio. She had a committee of people that helped her. Mm-hmm. And they put on 5 shows. It's a biennial exhibit, so every other year. Their first exhibit was in 2001, and they put on 5 shows there in Columbus. I got involved in 2007. I submitted a couple of pieces, and they were accepted. Mm-hmm. And I went to Columbus to see it, and I was just so moved by the exhibit, and also just hearing Vicky's story and the inspiration behind creating this incredible exhibition, that I wanted to get involved. So I volunteered to provide some support, and I'm an engineer and I do technical work, and so I volunteered to take over some of the technology challenges that they had. Mm-hmm. And so I helped put on the 2009 exhibition. It was still in Columbus. But I worked with them to make that happen. And I ended up traveling then to see it in 2009. And that's when Vicky and her co-chair let me know that they were thinking that they were done, that they were ready to put it in somebody's hands. Uh-huh. And they just thought that I was the right person to take it. And they just felt that it was good timing, that after 5 times in Columbus, it was really ready for something new. Mm-hmm. And so I brought it to where I live in Northern Virginia. And so we have now just finished our third exhibit here in the Washington, D.C. area. So we just had our 2015 exhibit. And it just continues to grow and get better. And we're already excited about 2017 and, you know, some new ideas. And it's a really special exhibit. I think it's unique in that it has just incredibly wonderful work, but it's the stories. There's really nothing like it when you read stories behind the work that people have made. And we now have on our website, if people want to go visit sacredthreadsquilts.com, there is a page, it's the stories page, and you can see little video clips, 3-minute video clips taken of the artist talking about their artwork. And I will tell you, if you go through them one right after another, it is incredibly moving. This was done in partnership with the Quilt Alliance, where we're documenting the stories of quilters and quilt makers. And so we had a partnership, and the Quilt Alliance came, and we videotaped. And they're amazing. So I highly encourage people to go to the website and view the Sacred Threads galleries and also listen to these video clips.
So being that this is an every other year event, then people can plan a particular piece even to ask to, or how would you say
to submit.
It,
to
submit,
to
that's
submit.
The word, yes.
Yep.
So do you have a theme every year or every show?
No, the themes stay the same.
Okay.
They are always around joy, inspiration, spirituality. We're open to all faith traditions. Peace and brotherhood, healing, and grief. And so those themes always stay the same. So when you know, people are thinking about wanting to enter, they just want to think about those themes and think about their own work and what they've made or what they might like to make that is appropriate for those themes.
Okay. So how many pieces, I mean, this actually the last 2 years has been just down the street from me, or the last two times. Just down the street from my house. So I've been very lucky to also be in town, and so I could go and see them. So your venue is a set size here in Herndon. Do you have a certain number that you have to limit to?
So we were able to exhibit 310 pieces in this last exhibition. Now, we did spread out a little bit because in addition to the fellowship hall that we turned into a gallery using pipe and drape, we were also able to exhibit pieces in the sanctuary, the chapel, and the atrium in the church. So that was a fantastic opportunity for us to be able to include more work. I think there were about 40 pieces outside of the main gallery space. So, you know, if typically we have about 270, 280 pieces in the exhibition.
Okay, and do you have many more than that people enter to be considered?
Yes, sadly we do. It's really painful to say no to anything that people submit, because the work is always so wonderful and the stories are so wonderful, but we can only hang so much.
Right.
So we do have to jury it for space. It's not a judged show. We're never evaluating work based on craftsmanship. The only time craftsmanship comes into play is when it's important to communicate the idea that is trying to be conveyed. But there's we do not look at craftsmanship. It is strictly the power of the imagery and the story behind the work. Unfortunately, we do get about double what we can actually take.
And
it's the worst day of the year for me when I have to send those letters to let people know that they haven't been accepted. So I wish we could take it all.
Now, I'm curious from a standpoint of showing the exhibit, do you plan out a new layout each year? Because since I've been for 2 years now, two times, the layout was somewhat similar, but there was a big difference too.
Yes. So we love to change it up. The curator of the exhibit is Barbara Hollinger, and she is just like this phenomenal creative mind. And for her, it's something that she just loves doing, is just thinking about that space and what can she do to create something really interesting. So this is our third year, and the third year that she has planned what the labyrinth on the inside will look like. And I like the fact that it changes. I think it's interesting. So our visitors come and they see something fresh. So not only is it all new artwork, but it's also just a completely different maze and walking through. 1 year there was one way in and one way out, and so while it wrapped around and it was a maze, there was just really one path. This year and the first year we did it, we had multiple paths, and so you had to double back. You weren't really sure, have I seen everything? Some people love that because you kind of get lost. You kind of, and other people, and then you also get off that mode of, you know, kind of walking through. So some people, you know, really appreciate that kind of that idea that you get lost. Other people found that really frustrating. It's like, I don't know if I saw everything. So there's definitely pros and cons, but I will guarantee you that we will be changing it up because that's something that we like to do, and we think that it helps to keep the exhibit fresh.
Now, the one piece that if you could just tell us about it, because I know it was the pyramid of quilts and blankets and things was created as sort of in the middle of this maze. How was that idea developed?
Yes. Yeah, so that, again, is the brainchild of Barb Hollinger. She had seen in at the Denver Art Museum a stack of blankets that was just really touched her. I think it was like just a rectangular structure that went like floor to ceiling. And that really moved her. And so she was thinking about, you know, what could we do at Sacred Threads that would be similar and have that similar kind of impact? And so she designed a pyramid scheme. And so we took quilts from all of our committee members. And these are quilts that we've had from our childhood that we've made for our family members that have been given to us, essentially comfort quilts and blankets, anything that was handmade. So we also had some afghans and things in there as well. And she created a core, pyramid-shaped core, and then we took the quilts and wrapped them around this core. So we created this incredible stack. And it was powerful, and she wrote a beautiful poem about why we stitch. You know, we stitch for friends, we stitch for strangers, we stitch for causes, we stitch, you know, to give back, we stitch for warmth. I mean, it was beautifully said, and many, many people commented that they were very moved by it. And what I liked about it is because Sacred Threads does tend to be artwork, this, you know, there's a lot of us that also make quilts for family members for the couch and for beds and for the crib. And it all connects us. It's all quilting. And so this pyramid really connected all of the different styles of quilting, not just people that are making original work. And so I think that was really a great unifying thing for our visitors that were coming in that make quilts.
Yeah, I loved it because it brought a more, I guess it made everybody relate to what a quilt is, as to what they may make, even though what was being exhibited was more show quilts.
Exactly.
So,
right.
Yeah,
exactly.
So you had these both sides of the world. Lisa, this has been just great information. I think it's an opportunity. I bet there's a lot of people who have pieces or want to make pieces, and I'm hoping they submit to you.
I hope so. Please check out our website, sacredthreadsquilts.com. There's a call for entry page. They can read about it, and they can email me if they have any questions.
Thank you so much, Lisa.
Thank you.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts & More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To maintain consistency when piecing, keep your eye on the spot where the needle enters the fabric, not the needle going up and down.
Hi, I'm Linda Augsburg, executive editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making pillowcases and creating smiles. For people who love to sew or quilt, it's so easy to lift spirits and bring smiles to hospitalized kids, homeless families, and others in need. Simply join American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine's 1 Million Pillowcase Challenge. Make one, two, or more pillowcases and donate them in your local community. You'll create just as many smiles. Join the movement today. Find complete details, download free patterns, and record your donations online at allpeoplequilt.com/million pillowcases.
See what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I am really we're really going to have a good time here to wrap up our show, because Erin Cox is here to talk to me from Why Not So. And we're going to talk a lot about her brand new book called Sweet Tweets. Yay. And it's just been all over the place. It is the most adorable, adorable book ever. So hi, Erin. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Pat. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So, and we get to meet now the third time since we've.
Yes.
I know. We met many years ago, which you had to remind me, and I apologize for that. But
oh, that's okay.
And so I think this is so fun because you're like, oh, we've met. And it's great. I love that. I was actually vending at a show, which I don't do very often. So very fun. How did you start making quilts, Erin?
I started quilting. I had always sewn and embroidered and things. And I lived in Lancaster County in PA. And I was surrounded by quilt shops, and beautiful quilts. You'd see them hanging out on the line on a nice day. And I just thought, I want to do that. I want to learn to make one of those. And so I got a book and just started, and I loved it. It was like it filled that space, you know, that crafty, creative space that like nothing else quite did for me. But quilting, it was it. It was like, this is it. I love it. I want to always do this.
Yeah. Oh, I know that exact feeling. I'm the same. I like fabric, and I used to make clothing. So when I made quilts, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is way better.
Yeah. Yeah, I used to make clothes too for my oldest, who, you know, she's a teenager now, but when she was really little, I made cute little pinafores and dresses, and it was fun, and that was good, but just not the same as quilting.
No. Let's talk about the book, because it is, I think, touching so many people. So many people are like, I can do this, and it's adorable and fun. So your book is called Sweet Tweet, like a little bird, and I know you had one of the features in it is raw edge applique, but you're doing a technique you call free motion raw edge applique. So explain that to me.
Well, for the book, you use your applique pieces the way you would with any raw edge. So it's you know, use fusible interfacing, and then you press it to your background fabric. But instead of a sort of like a neat stitch around it, mm-hmm. I use a black thread, and I go around it two or three times so that it sort of looks like a sketchbook or that it's drawn. It's just a fun, really fun way to applique.
So when did you start doing that?
I started in probably 2010 or 2011. I can't remember exactly. Somewhere in there, I had seen a few things on blogs and Flickr when we were all on Flickr. And I loved it. It was just so fun. It's like no pressure. It was just a really fun way to draw something and, you know, stick it down, stitch around it, and it was cute. So it was just, and it's fast, and I have a lot of kids, and it was something that really just spoke to me. I could just take a few hours and have something completely finished, you know, and I loved it. It was great.
Now, before you started designing the book or coming up with things for the book, were you making these little bird images? Because there's pretty much little adorable, adorable little birds on everything. They're so, so cute. They really are cute. But were you making these before the book, or did this?
I was. Actually, a few projects in the book are from when I first started, and I had a lot of people email and ask if I would make patterns for them and things, and I'm just really not technical. I do not know how to make a PDF or anything like that, so I never did it. And it just, the opportunity for the book came about, and I thought, I'm going to do the birds. You know, it's something that I really enjoy, and it's personal to me, and I just thought, you know, maybe someone else would like to have the patterns for it, and that's just really how the idea came about.
Yeah, I just think that they're so neat because the details of them are your stitching. You stitch their little beaks and their little feet, you know, and so there isn't like you have to fuse a little beak and a little feet. You're just doing it with the thread work, which is immensely fun. And you have the most gorgeous color sense.
Thank you.
your color sense, everything in there is just yummy, yummy colors. And I think that that's another reason why people are probably super attracted.
Thank you.
Everything
I love
visually.
Color.
Yeah, it's really great. Now, I do fusible applique with the blanket stitch, you know, the more traditional. So I'm curious, can you give me a couple of tips for being successful at this? Because are we dropping the feed dogs? Do we need stabilizers?
Yes.
You know?
Yes. I in the beginning, I didn't use any sort of stabilizer behind my linen, which is what I usually do my birds on. I like the way it looks, and it's always been that way. Mm-hmm. I've done them on, you know, printed fabric or a light background, and I prefer the linen. So linen's kind of funny and stretches and moves different than our quilting cotton, so you really should have a lightweight fusible behind it. And you do drop your feed dogs, and you do need a free motion foot so that you can move your fabric freely under the needle and kind of just outline your applique piece.
Yeah. And so it's even more forgiving than doing like, you know, machine quilting. You know, it's the same motion, but you're sketching like. So it doesn't have to be right on the line, and you can go back over it. And it's just so cool.
Yeah, it's just fun. There's no stress, no pressure. If the lines go off of the little applique piece, that's great. If they don't, that's fine. I just like it. I mean, you know, if you're sketching in a book, that's your sketch. You know, it's just you know, your idea coming down. It might not – it's like a rough draft kind of. It's not perfect, but the lines when you're stitching like that, I really like it, and I really like not having any stress sometimes when I'm sewing.
Right. You don't have to concentrate quite so hard on these to
right. They're just for fun.
Yeah.
And now, they're great gifts.
Yeah. You've also added crochet, little scallop crochets on some of the pieces. Was that something you thought up for the book, or have you always done that?
I haven't always done it. I have crocheted for years, but they're actually my friend Heather at Vintage Gray Handmade. She has a blog. She does beautiful, beautiful scalloped edges on her pillows and hot pads and things like that. And I loved it. I like died when I saw it. I was like, oh, this is so cute. I have to do this. So then we had a swap one Christmas, and I just did a few ornaments with it. And I thought, this is really cute. And so every once in a while, I'll, you know, add it into something, you know, if it feels like it fits right.
And I really like the one hot pad that's the birds and the bees hot pad, because it's got so many cute elements in it. Plus, you did a little bit of stitchery on one of the hexagons in the middle. Just clever.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
I love the honeybee block. It's one of my favorites. And I'd originally made a honeybee block and had a bird in the center where the nine patch typically is. But then I thought, nah, you know, I didn't really like the idea. And then I just thought, well, you know, the bee shapes are sort of like the shape I use for my birds. And so I just decided to turn those into birds, and then hexagons. I love those. So I just put those instead of a nine patch in the center, and that's how that came about.
That's how it came about. That is so, so cute. Okay, now you have to give me the secret to make that little bitty quilt that is in the one project.
That is so, so easy. So I don't throw anything away ever. That is like, so I have little tiny bits of fabric in bags and in jars and things. And so those are half inch cut squares, and I just take a piece of the fusible web and lay them out very carefully on the fusible web, and you're supposed to put a
pressing cloth down, and but sometimes I just stick my iron right on, like for a little while, and then clean my iron later. But that's how that, you know, that's how I do that. You just kind of put them on the fusible web with the paper still on, iron them down. Then when you take it off, you can do your stitching lines around the little patchwork and do a little grid, and it holds everything in place, even though they have raw edges. So.
Yeah, and it's really effective because when you first, it's tiny, so when you first glance at it, it you know, and it fits in with everything else because it's all very relaxed. So I didn't even notice that it wasn't sewn into like a patchwork block.
Yeah.
I thought, oh my gosh, that's so tiny.
It is. I love tiny.
Oh, well, I want to switch gears here. We have about 2 minutes here at the end.
Okay.
And I want you to tell me a little bit about, you have a couple of sections on your website, whynotsew.blogspot.com, and you have one on hand piecing. And I'm, I learned to quilt by hand piecing, and I just thought that you have an excellent series on there.
Thank you.
Can you give me a little tip or two about hand piecing for people?
Sure. That came about because we were moving and I knew that we wouldn't have electricity, and that sort of panicked me because I have to sew all the time. So I started taking traditional blocks, and you know, Farmer's Wife was real big, and so 6-inch blocks were really big, and I thought, well, I'm just going to do 6-inch blocks, and some people might want to do their Farmer's Wife hand-pieced. Mm-hmm. And so I took some traditional ones and put the tutorials up. And for hand piecing, you know, you have to, well, the way I do it is draw my seam allowance so that I have my, you know, stitching line. And there's really not a lot to it. You know, you just, it's slow, it's comforting, it's really relaxing, really precise, and I love it. There's a lot of go ahead.
I have a question. Do you backstitch every so often on a long stretch?
I don't actually. I should actually. One of my friends told me that she does, and I thought, maybe I should start doing it. And I still don't. I haven't had anything come apart on me yet. But I do very, very tiny stitches.
Oh, okay.
They're really, really tiny. So, you know, I haven't had any trouble yet, but
well, that's probably making the small stitches is probably the key then, because you don't have as big a gap as, you know, I might might have been.
And I don't launder the things that I make by hand very often. So, and they they're kind of just like for me to display. They're usually small quilts, so I feel pretty safe there. But yeah, backstitching every like 2 or 3 stitches is fine, or real tiny stitches.
Right,
but I usually just. Not the beginning and not the end. So backstitch at the beginning and backstitch at the end.
Well, this has been so much fun, Erin. I appreciate
Oh, I'm so glad to talk to you. It's been awesome.
I know. Well, everybody go out and visit Erin Cox at her website and pick up her book.
Oh, thanks, Pat.
This is American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. See you next week.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques.